Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I am so incredibly excited today because we have Jessica and Dennis Stone. Dennis is Robert B. Stone's son and has been so nice to give me permission to read from his many wonderful books. And so I reached out to Dennis to get a little more insight behind the scenes about Robert B. Stone. If you have watched my channel for a while, we have some episodes where we've gone into a little bit of Robert B. Stone's background, but there's certainly a lot we don't know about. And if you read about Robert B. Stone, it would appear that he's written so many books and there's so many other insights. Check out my episode on Miracle Metaphysics Power and the Magic of Psychotronic Power. And so thank you so much for joining me on the Reality Revolution. So nice to have you both.
Thank you, Brian. Again, it's an honor to talk to you, and thank you for reading from my father's works.
So when you go through the biography of Robert B. Stone, he was, it appears he went to MIT, was a scientist. And so it's interesting when you look at a lot of these classic self-help authors, they come from a different background. The reason there was so much credibility in his work is his background. He had gone to college and studied to be, was it an engineer? Tell me a little bit about what he was studying to begin with.
Well, he had a general engineering degree from MIT. And frankly, he never really used it. He was a bit of an entrepreneur. He first followed his father's footsteps in his father's business. It took him a number of decades, I think, and he would agree with me if he was here, to find his path.
Right.
When I was growing up as a child, he was doing public relations and, again, going into this mass communication with the public, which is what, you know, an art that he mastered in these books.
Right.
He was a member of a mental health association. So he started to see his interests in the mind and helping people. And so I could see now in retrospect, kind of the beginnings of what became a very successful career as an author.
Well, when people read his works, they may think, oh, I've seen this before. We got to remember when all of this was written, this wasn't as popular a topic. And for somebody who's an engineer at MIT, it's a little bit of a reach to start talking about the universe and metaphysics in a different way. And so a lot of these books at the time were groundbreaking. And when I, you know, as somebody who loves books, I remember one of the first times I found Robert was Hypnodietetics, and they had in the old days when there was no MP3, they had a record that you could just like,
oh wow, I don't have that edition.
And so and then, you know, you'd find these old at the you'd find these hypno cybernetics and they had a certain style, a certain genre about them back then, a way of it was more than just what his insight was, a way of writing that it was enjoyable and fun. There was a certain lightness to it that really helped seep in a lot of these lessons. And so I was thinking, wow, it would have been amazing to be raised by this man. And so.
and his wife, my
and
mother.
And well, of course, two of them were amazing. Was her name correct?
Yes.
Okay. And she herself was a great, you know, artist and some other interesting things as I read about, correct?
Yeah, she considered herself an old soul and
mystic,
believed in the occult and the powers of the universe. And our
house
was filled with the kind of books you're reading from today, Edgar Casey books and everything. So, you know, she was doing the I Ching and all sorts of things, and knew the lady who published The Course in Miracles. And she just hung out with this incredible slice of people from all over the world. That somehow she attracted, you know, like a magnet.
Right.
So I think she was an influence on my father. So let me, he talks in his audio tape that I sent you about his transition in writing. He first talked about improving your home.
That was his book.
Yeah, he worked with his brother-in-law, who was an architect, on how to improve where you live. Then he worked with a hypnotist, Sidney Petrie, and he showed some of his books. And this was their most famous. This is How to Improve Your Body. This is Losing Weight. This was a bestseller.
Right.
Martinis and Whipped Cream. The very first low-protein diet. And then he moved from improving your home and to improving your body to improving your mind. And again, you know these books now. I mean, he worked with, you know, Jose Silva, the Silva Method, You the Healer, you know, The Magic of, and then he went off on his own and, you know, authored these books because he was on a trajectory. And you know, by the end of his life, he penned, you know, 10 or more books like this about channeling the great powers of the universe in a very practical way to
he was
to improve your life.
He was definitely very prolific in his writing. So was he teaching you this stuff while you're young, growing up, or was how did someone?
Yes.
He was really.
I was raised into it as well.
It just remember some interesting stories. A lot of them say I was, you know, parents often breed opposite in their kids, right? So you know, he had the long hippie hair and the hippie medallion, you know, hair, and I was the conservative scientist student. So I was kind of going,
He was the rebel.
Interesting. I was the rebel. Yeah. So I'm going, metaphysics? I'm studying physics. I'm not sure about the meta. You know, I'm curious. You know, so I'm a bit agnostic, but I saw so many things. He'd have Silva Mind Control graduate courses in our living room, you know, once a week and do all kinds of, you know, ESP and curling and photography and all kinds of things. And sometimes I'd get involved. So yeah, I was exposed to all of this through osmosis, but he didn't try to teach me per se. He's hoping, I guess, I would discover it. Now, yeah, he worked with Jessica quite a bit too.
I mean, I would say he worked with me quite a bit because he passed away when I was relatively young. Right. And he tried to keep his kids out of it to an extent, but he did hypnotize me once.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he hypnotized me into liking olives.
Liking olives.
I mean, what else would a kid would have wanted? I was maybe like 8 or 9.
But since then, you've been applying.
Yeah, I started. I got into this book when I was about 15.
Uh-huh.
This and the Silva Method are probably my most used throughout the years. But yeah, I've been actually applying his work for a good 17 years or so.
Yeah, I think everybody in the family, Jessica, has applied this system, you know, more than anyone.
Well, it's definitely changed my life. I've been using these techniques. One of the amazing things about Robert Stone is that he makes it easy to understand. He'll take a pretty complicated subject and then narrow it down to a three-step process pretty much anybody can do. And make it sort of fun. So a lot of times you read other authors and they'll go into the science of it and they'll make it kind of complicated and you have to do too much. And that's what so that's what I find with people that contact me. It's a breath of fresh air. Is it really that easy? And he did make it pretty easy. So
it's really that easy.
It is that easy. That's amazing. Some people might even be like, it seems too simple. They might, you know, when they look at it, but when I, it's really fascinating. Jose Silva is this incredibly fascinating, sort of mysterious man. You don't go on YouTube and find a bunch of recordings of Jose Silva. He was sort of a private man, even though he developed all this stuff. And so did you get any background on how Robert Stone met Jose Silva or how he started? Because without Robert Stone, the Silva Method really isn't what it is today. He took the basics of the Silva Method and it became this worldwide phenomenon after that point, right? So
yeah, and on that same audio tape, and it's on his website, robertbstone.com, if anyone wants to hear it themselves. Yeah. But he talks about he was giving a class, I guess as a hotel with many, you know, conference rooms. And during a break, he went and listened to whatever the guy was teaching next door, in the room next door. It turned out that was a Silva instructor.
Right.
This is in Hawaii, and this is the first time he was exposed to that. He talked to that instructor during his break and became a student and then became a teacher and then became a worldwide lecturer and became a co-author with Jose. And like you say, was a great factor in the expansion of the Silva Method around the world.
In another side question, it would appear in reading the biography, you guys were living in Huntington Bay, New York, and then you moved in this beautiful house, and then you moved to Hawaii. He writes about some Hawaiian myths and stories and kind of started integrating that into some of his other books. So tell me a little more about this sort of spiritual expansion that happened when you moved to Hawaii.
Well, again, I think a lot of that had to do with my mom, because she would travel the world seeking special places and special people, spiritual places, spiritual people. So when she moved to Hawaii, and she even when we went there on just vacation before, she had already met kahunas. Kahunas are like the shamans, if you will, of Hawaiian culture. You know, knew all the ancient ways and the mysticism. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, and they would both go meet with these last few kahunas that were surviving in Hawaii and try to absorb as much of their wisdom as possible. And you see that sprinkled through my dad's books.
Right. One thing that people may misunderstand, they look at somebody like a Robert B. Stone and they think, yeah, this guy is probably sitting around meditating hours a day. I don't get the impression that he was doing that. Was he?
He probably spent more time eating ice cream than meditating.
No, I think he spent the most amount of time on the beach. He had an amazing ability to organize his time. And and he explained this to me one day. You know, I write, you know, 15 minutes before breakfast. So you start at, you know, at 8 and end at 8:15. And I go eat breakfast. And then, you know, I'll read the newspaper. And then I'll sit down and write for 2 hours and, you know, do this and that. Anyway, and he went through this whole routine. At 3:15, he'd leave for the beach, you know, and he timed it so he wouldn't hit rush hour traffic. I mean, we had an incredible structure.
Wow.
But that also tells you, like, when it's time to write, he said it just flowed.
Right.
He just opened up and channeled whatever that energy and power was and into the words.
Right.
And he, you know, this will sound so bizarre to today's generation, but he wrote with a pen on paper and he started at the beginning and he kept writing until the end. None of this, you know, Microsoft Word where we're doing chapter 3, then let me go fix chapter 2. He just wrote linearly. And again, in the structured time slots, and it's, you know, of course, very minor corrections after the typist and improves. But
amazing.
That's how that was his secret. Is he could produce on schedule this amazing wisdom, and like you said, Brian, in a form people can understand. He tried to make it usable, useful, practical.
Right. One of the really profound things about the Silva technique is this concept of subjective communication. This idea that you can send your thoughts to someone else, and they really treated it like a science, where if you, at a certain time before you go to sleep, when your brainwave is at a certain state, you can connect with someone else and send them messages, which is something outside of what a lot of other people were. Did you ever get the sense that you were being sent a message from your father or some, because he was probably actively doing these type of things? Did you ever get a sense that I'm receiving a thought right now, or there's an impression I'm being sent from my father?
Once I in Hawaii, he had a translation of one of his books in the most bizarre language. I mean, it was some kind of Western language, but it had little squiggles and things. I had no idea. And he said, "Dennis, guess what language this is in?" And, you know, he's standing there and I'm sitting there and looking at this, you know, just a kind of empty page of the book. And I looked up at him and said, "Serbian." And he said, "Yes." Where did I get that idea?
You know? He probably said it.
So, yeah, there were cases like that where ideas would just mysteriously appear in my head.
Right. So it's interesting because you are a scientist. An engineer, a physicist, right? That you're more interested in the scientific aspect, as you had mentioned earlier in the interview, right? There's that doubter, that part of you that is anybody that knows about science that hears this stuff. That so there's a balancing. This is something that your father taught you. How have you, from a scientific perspective, integrated some of this stuff?
Well, some scientists will just rule out anything that science doesn't explain. I don't rule it out. I just say, well, it's probably real. It's just science hasn't explained why yet.
Right.
You know, I mean, we all get premonitions. I mean, and things like that. They're just beyond science. You know, so we have experience outside that circle. I think someday science will explain these things. But until they do, we shouldn't wait. We can still use them if we can, you know, harness the power.
That's the great thing. It's starting beyond that. It's like a post-scientific idea that we're kind of exploring. And in Miracle Metaphysics Power, he's really talking about a concept that remote viewers that are talking about being able to access the information of anything in history and time and space and know what's going on. And there are later writers that have explored this in detail that are really just talking about the same thing he started with in that book. So would it ever seem like he would get information about stuff? And you're like, where did you get that information? You wouldn't have got that from the encyclopedia. It just kind of seemingly came out of nowhere. And a lot of what his stuff is talking about is accessing this field of information. Did you ever notice anything unusual in that respect?
Well, he didn't, you know, proclaim, hey, I just discovered something. He was well-read, and you know, my mom was always doing research and bringing him interesting books and introducing interesting people. And there was no internet, mind you.
Right.
But the wisdom flowed somehow, but I didn't know. I didn't know. I didn't hear the yell of Eureka.
Right. Jessica, since you've been applying these all this time, tell me a little bit of your success stories or things that might have happen. Have you used some of these techniques that he taught you?
It's such a normal part of my life. I'm not really sure which one to tell you, which is really about what do I want at that time. Do I want a new job? What do I want? But yes, I do apply it in my pretty much daily life, to the extent where it's just normal to me. Right. It doesn't surprise me when weird things happen. It doesn't surprise me if something pops in my head. It doesn't surprise me if I put something in somebody else's head. It's just part of my life. And because it's kind of sort of trending these days and no longer so far ahead of its time, I've been able to connect with other people with similar mindsets and actually communicate about it. Growing up as a teenager at 15 years old, you know, reading something like this, it was a bit alienating. Because I didn't just walk around and, you know, claim I was like, you know, telepathic or anything crazy like this, because I'd get locked up in a mental institution.
But you can do that now.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Later on in his career, he, like, as you mentioned, started writing about channeling these higher dimensional powers and even UFOs and aliens. And what was his tell me a little more about his perspective, how it evolved and how he started to explore and go even further with what he was writing about.
Well, he didn't, this was not the subject over the dinner table.
Okay.
he really didn't talk much about where he was headed in that direction. I mean, he'd ask me, you work for NASA, right? I said, yeah, Dad. I want to know the truth about the UFOs.
Right.
That's another department. I really don't know anything. Yeah. So.
Right.
I wasn't much help.
Right. But it's an exciting. He was accessing this field that he talked about, and then later on, he's talking about what it seems a very significant impression that he had that there are these higher intelligences. How to prepare for it, and it, you know, it's an interesting evolution from those beginning points where he is saying we have access to this field of information, and then he's going even further. So I just thought that super fascinating and interesting part of his overall collection of writings.
Yeah, he certainly professed his belief that aliens are among us.
Right.
You know, they're whites and grays, and yeah, he did a lot of research into this. And again, he may have just connected in unusual ways, but he certainly had at the core belief felt that we're not alone. In fact, you know, not even right now, right here.
I believe he even wrote a book about cells and how the cells are, am I correct? The Secret Life
of Your Cells, yeah.
Right, and so he's going beyond just some of the basic concepts of metaphysics and really going in to the microscopic world and how it interacts and kind of creating this big picture. When you look at it all, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, he and my mother both believed that, you know, life was an incredible force that connects everyone. Life, right, and energy, or call it God, whatever you want to call it. And everything, every cell, every rock, every tree, every, right, you know, every form of life was part, part of the fabric of the, right, universe and connected.
One of the more interesting stories he tells is in Miracle Metaphysic Power, there was like an ant infestation in his house, and he communicated with the ants and said, hey, you know, you need to cut it out. And like they did eventually, he said, of course the ants are going to die off very quickly, but he had effectively communicated with the ants and they made it a pact, an agreement, a treaty with him that we'll leave you alone. And this is our little line of demarcation. And I've had, of all the things I mentioned, I've had so many people contact me about that passage. Like, you know, I did, right, I communicated with the ants. We didn't know what to do. They just kept, and it worked. And it's temporary because ants have a short lifespan, is what your dad said. But so
you have to communicate with the birds too.
Oh my God. He showed up at the beach every day at the, right, regular time. When he got out of his car, the birds would just swarm and follow him like a cloud until he sat down in his usual place. There's a newspaper, wow, article featuring him. They call him the Birdman of Waikiki.
Really?
So yeah, he was at one with lots of different life forms.
Yeah, yeah. I've affected the energy of animals. I was able to control a goat. One of my friends has a goat, and the goat was, you know, they liked a headbang kind of, and was getting too excited, and I was able to like communicate, like, lower your energy down, and it was like instant. Like I was, yeah,
I'm not surprised.
The energy of the goat.
I mean, that's what he's implying with this mm-hmm. connection that we have to the cells, to the insects, to the birds, to everything. The way, I mean, of course, we've heard this from time immemorial from multiple authors, but there is I can't put it into words. There's a sort of humorous joy in which he teaches that lesson. It's not really necessarily poetic. It's more like, I can't find the exact word for it. It was just a carefree, joyous, oh yeah, by the way, we're connected with all of life. And it's this, and so you come out of it, it's a different impression when you're reading it, as opposed to other philosophers or great religious speakers who have talked about the same concept.
Humor was a huge part of his life, right, Brian. Going back to the dinner table, I mean, jokes and laughter, he'd find humor everywhere, and it really was, you know, deep in his soul, and it made us all grow up in an environment where we were positive thinkers, which was also a key, right, theme of all of his books, you know, projecting positive energy. I think laughter was a key element of that.
Clearly it was, and that is why these resound so much. So did you guys stay? Did you end up staying in Hawaii?
So we moved there when I was just entering high school. So I went to high school, stayed for college, and then I moved to the mainland, mm-hmm. Eventually came here to Houston, Texas. But my parents stayed in Hawaii for almost 30 years until things got kind of expensive, and they moved to Thailand.
Yeah, I saw that. They moved to Thailand.
International.
A super late, like, your mom was in her 90s when they moved to Thailand, right?
Well, my dad passed away in Thailand. She moved back to the U.S., lived in Florida, and then said, you know, I love Thailand. I want to go back. So she went and lived there a second time, left when she was 97.
Who moves to Thailand when they're 97? That's amazing.
So she moved away when she was 97.
Moved away.
But she was about 90 the second time she moved
back.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like your dad's secret weapon was your mom, that she was also a part and parcel. Yeah, exactly. So did he have any, did he know of any famous people or other writers that we might have seen along the way that he interacted with? That
he had an incredible network of contacts all over the world, as did mm-hmm. my mom. And it was all done the old-fashioned way. You write a letter, you lick a stamp, you mail it, wait 3 weeks for a reply. And yet they were able to, you know, find brilliant people. And I know he worked with collaborators in Greece and just all over the world.
Right.
And my mom had a network too. And I think together they harvested incredible wisdom from some great people.
Well, the interesting thing with his work and with who he worked with is that you see it with other authors so many times referencing or using these techniques. And what people may not realize is that he was at the very beginning of this. The thing I'm interested in is the Parker Publishing. There's this certain genre of publishing, if people know or collect books. There are these amazing books that happened in the 60s, kind of post New Thought, and they all had a certain copyright style. And some of them are super rare. I've talked about it, and that's one of the reasons I explored it with Robert. And
yeah, Martinez Whipped Cream was
right with Parker. Books, those wonderful books, were Parker Publishing. What happened to Parker Publishing? There is probably dozens of these wonderful books that are not being published right now. It's just like they just disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, the economic reasons for that. I do know they were bought out by, right. I think today it's Savvis or something like that.
Okay.
And you know, there is a publisher that owns the rights to the book that Parker published.
Right.
But yeah, apparently no one's filling that void today.
Right. It's
but
just like
thank God we have ebooks, and so mm-hmm. people like me can you know take these books and make them available electronically. So and I do this just to share my dad's wisdom and try to help people around the world. And so I think that the need for a Parker, if you will, is somewhat lessened by the fact that ebooks are now so ubiquitous.
It would appear that there's several books that I still see references to that I haven't read. There's lots more. They're still on the way. Is that correct? You have about 11 or 12 on Kindle right now, correct? And
I've got 13. We're going to do Hypnocybernetics. I found another book. You may not even seen it yet. It's called Conduct Your Own Awareness Sessions.
Oh.
And I looked at it and it was doing the same metaphysical things, but doing it as sort of a party format.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, I've read that one too. And it does look like it would be a pretty good party book.
Yeah, oh, okay. Party book doing metaphysical occult stuff.
Yeah, it sounds
gonna,
like a good
one. You're going to love that one.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm going to convert that to ebook.
Yeah, I mean,
well.
Some of these books, as a book collector, they just didn't give him a big publishing run. And so there's some.
Well, yeah, you know, and I realized we need to do the ebook thing because, you know, go try to buy this right now. It's like $1,000 to get a used copy.
Right.
And the pages are probably falling apart. I realized, you know, in talking to Jessica and others that, you know, certain of these books are in demand. And maybe now is, you know, a few years ago I started this, was the time to really begin trying to get them out as ebooks. And so I'm really pleased to have done that. And thank you, Brian, for helping to popularize them through your incredible show.
I'm so honored to get a chance to read portions of these books, but it's never going to do it justice. Everybody needs, if you hear one of these books, it's just kind of an introduction, a sampling that I'm trying to do. But I highly suggest that anybody that hears one of these episodes, go and read the whole entire book. He, with most of these books, would try to look at all facets. And he had amazing techniques to help people find love and to find money and improve their health And really, whoever is out there watching this, if there's something you're struggling with, Robert B. Stone talked about it and has specific techniques that will help you. And they resound through the decades. They still, it's as if when I'm doing it, it's so natural and easy. That's what's so amazing and compelling about this information. It's just another thing that hypnosis has evolved. He was doing hypnosis way back. And if you read the old literature, we didn't really have a lot of knowledge and application for hypnosis. When he was using it, it was cutting edge work on brain waves and breathing and those kind of things, his language that he was using. And so people today say, oh, we hear about hypnosis, but back then it was sort of like the beginning. He was at the cutting edge.
Yeah, going back to his history and his work with Petrie, the hypnotist.
Right.
It wasn't just about diet books, but they wrote, I've got 10 books that they wrote together about using hypnosis, and you have some too.
Right.
Self-hypnosis, the idea of hypnotizing yourself, and Jose Silva called it the alpha level and so on. I mean, these were all pretty much similar ideas that were independently developed and popularized. And so he worked with all of them and took it to a higher level.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking with me. And I'm going to keep an eye out for any future books that are coming out. I'm super excited. And we may figure out a way to narrate some of these books in full audiobook form. We're still working, figuring out how to do that.
Right.
But if you do not know Robert B. Stone, I'm so excited for you. There's so much.
Brian can't hear you.
You can't hear me now? Can you hear me now? All right.
Oops. Just give it a second.
Can you still hear me? All right. Hold on 1 second. All right. Yeah, that was on my end, my internet. So, but we'll cut that out. So, but if you haven't heard of Robert B. Stone, I'm so excited for you. There's so much material available and it's going to change your life. It's changed my life. It's changed countless others' lives. And his integration of Silva mind control and these techniques. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about Robert. And it's a real honor to read your stuff. And is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we go?
Just want to say thank you, Brian, for the great work you do and popularizing not just my father, but all these incredible authors and visionaries that you've found. And congratulations on building such a great following. You're doing the world a huge service. So,
well, thank you.
We applaud you. Thank you.
I will tell a little secret, and that is when I'm reading these authors, I feel like they're with me. I feel like when I read your father, he's there making jokes, telling me to do stuff. I feel his personality and his presence. And that's one reason I'm so attracted to reading this, because I feel like I'm making a connection with what they brought and what they were teaching in there. And it's so much fun to read his works. I feel his personality coming through, and how lucky to have him as a grandfather, as a father. And I'm so lucky to get a chance to talk to you about this. And wow, I'm still thinking about the story about the birds. I think that's just amazing that a human being would be known for that, that birds would gather around something. That has to tell you something, that something metaphysically was going on. He had a connection. Exactly. I can't stop thinking about that. But anyway, thank you so much. And welcome to the Reality Revolution.
Thank you.